This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. With me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones. Toby Creswell wrote this book, 1001 Songs, not to give an impression of the greatest songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, contrary to the words on the title page here. He actually wrote this book because he thought that, because, you know, as a very prestigious music editor, musical journalist for the Rolling Stone in Australia in the mid-90s, he considered himself somewhat an authority on what he thought were the more influential songs of the 20th century. And these are some of the more, well, 1001 of the more influential songs of the 20th century. The first influential song of the 20th century that we are going to feature here tonight came out near the end of the 20th century. In 1998, it is Fatboy Slim and the Rockefeller Skank. Now, this track was the beginning and the end of club culture. The beginning of the end of club culture. Sorry. Fatboy Slim's The Rockefeller Skank was a monster that went beyond its genre, big beat. It recorded at home. The Rockefeller Skank has a touch of the novelty record about it. It is kind of funny, but mostly it has a huge fat vocal hook in the sample Check It Out Now, The Funk's Old Brother. It has big dirty guitar lines in its electric selection of samples from the John Barry Seven's core movie star Beat Girl and the Just Brothers' Sliced Tomatoes. The record sold 5 million copies, and at that point, dance culture, which required an alternative self-image, was blown wide open. It's still a great track that break beats are still compelling. Most of all, Norman Cook, a.k.a. Fatboy Slim, mixes the track like he's DJing at a great party and having a wonderful time doing it. I think that separates me from the other DJs is the vaudeville element of it, you see? He said, The Rockefeller Skank and by Fatboy Slim, when I can find it here on this machine. Yeah, here it is!
Right now, the funk's old brother. Check it out now, the funk's old brother. Right about now, the funk's old brother. Check it out now, the funk's old brother. Right about now, the funk's old brother. Check it out now, the funk's old brother. Right about now, the funk's old brother. Right about now, about now. Right about now.
That was Fatboy Slim, im. No, I don't think I'm very good at doing that, no. Ben and Benna, that's who are. Ben and Ben, the blues men. You can find their B Squared Blues Show right here on Waiheke Radio from 8 until 10 p.m. every Tuesday night here with Ben and Ben. Or you can also find them on our website, the Waiheke Radio website, which is
www.waihekeradio.org.nz.
And the next track just happens to be The Setting Sun by the Chemical Brothers from 1996. And the Chemical Brothers described their second album, Dig Your Own Hole, as the best breaks they've ever broken. A bloody good soundtrack for people living today. Yes, that's what it says there. Yeah. The Chemical Brothers, Tom Rowlands and Ed Simmons, were the most fashionable DJs in Britain, and Noel Gallagher was the biggest rock star when they put rock and big beat together on this single. The Chemical Brothers had a spot at the ultra-hip Heavenly Social, a club night in London. The pair looked the part like Chaucer-reading nerds with turntables. In fact, actually, that's on the back of the book. Look, it says on the back of the book here, I'll read it, it says all the little samples. It says, a whole lot of love is pretty much 5 minutes and 35 seconds of the sound of a man having sex. Britney Spears is the embodiment of America's decline, selling highly sexualized chastity and Baptist Christianity in one bamidrift package. The Captain by Casey Chambers is the most un-PC woman, un-PC song ever sung by a woman. Mark Knopfler is the most inexpressive guitarist, no, singer, in history. The Chemical Brothers look the part like Chaucer-reading nerds with turntables. And on Wheels of Fire, Cream introduced the drum solo, something that played concerts for the next 15 years. They're all the things, the little samples written on the back of the book, so assumingly they're Toby Cresswell's funniest lines, which unfortunately I've just given away and spoiled it all for you. Damn. But having said that, this was just in the book here. The blah 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 looked the part like Chaucer reading nerds with turntables. They were photogenic and visible, and they toured, and thus they were important in making DJs a significant part of the music landscape as artists. On Setting Sun, Oasis's Noel Gallagher adds his vocal and guitar mix of White Noise, Paranoia, and artillery-like break to beats. We had this idea to do something like that for quite a while, said Rowlands, for the past couple of years or whatever, and then we managed to get Noel. He was offered to do something with us back in 95, and we saw him at the festival, and he kept saying, on the next album you should get me in, and that was kind of nice, really. It was just cool that he ended up doing it, and he liked the track. It was a painless procedure. I wonder where he's from. I'm just sort of doing a sort of fairly bland accent there. Yes. The Chemical Brothers were always eclectic, both in their DJ sets and on record, from straight-ahead techno to rock party chemical beats to Setting Sun to low, looping, weird tracks with Beth Orton singing on them. There were many techno dance artists that were regarded as faceless. The Chemical Brothers exuded personality. We've always been based on what we do on a wide appreciation of music. We weren't frightened to show it, said Rowlands. Dance music is made to play in clubs, even if it's nosebleed techno. It's still for a certain section of the population to enjoy this music. There's not a lot of intellectualizing that has to go on if you dance a lot. Dance is a pivotal thing. That was the Chemical Brothers, or this is the Chemical Brothers. I can't talk about it in the past tense yet because I haven't even played it, but this is the Chemical Brothers. And Setting Sun.
You're the devil in me, I brought it from the cold. You said your body was young, but your mind was very old.
You're coming on stronger than I like the way. The visions we have are fading away. You're part of a life I've never had. I'll tell you now, it's just too
That was Chemical Brothers and Setting Sun. Chemical Brothers, of course, looked like Chaucer reading nerds with turntables, according to Toby Cresswell, the writer of 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artist, the stories, and the secrets of behind them, a book which I, Seth Titley Jones, am presenting to you, and actually tracking down all the tracks that he mentions in this book, hence the name of my show, 1001 Songs. Now, actually, that is a very, apparently, that's one of Toby Cresswell's actually wittiest lines, actually, is the Chemical Brothers look the part, like Chaucer reading nerds with turntables. You know, and on the back of the book, he mentioned that on the blurb. I think I mentioned that before, didn't I? And he also said The Captain by Casey Chambers is the most un-PC song ever sung by a woman. And then Trevor came along just after I said that. Oh, Trevor. And Trevor said to me, he said, I thought that the most un-PC song ever sung by a woman was Stand By Your Man by Tammy Wynette. And actually, I looked that up, and apparently Tammy Wynette and that song is actually in here as well. But it's actually comes in at about number 756, and right now we're up to about number 82 in our 1001 song, so you'll be able to expect Tammy Wynette and Stand By Your Man sometime in a couple of years from now. So, you know, you've got that long to get as far away as possible if you really can't stand that song. I'm just warning you now. Just warning you now, you have been warned, and then I will say that again when and if I do ever do that song. If I haven't left the island or anything by then, when and if, I will say you have been warned. You have been warned again. I'm warning you now. Right, enough warnings, you're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. That is certainly not a warning, neither is this. This is Runaround Sue by Dion and the Belmonts. Actually, I can't remember. Maybe it is a warning. I can't remember the song very well at current present time. But anyway, Toby Cresswell does. He says, when Dion DiMucci puts on a rare show in Manhattan, the guest lists include Paul Simon, Billy Joel, Lou Reed, and Bruce Springsteen. All these artists were inspired by Dion's late 50s and early 60s hits. With this Italian tough guy attitude and a magnificently expressive voice, Dion was New York's first white rock and roll star. His background was in street corner doo-wop with Runaround Sue. He created a crossover hit that prefigured rock and roll writing. Most of all, though, there are incredible rhythms in the vocal parts. The song bounces around like a pinball, the Belmonts providing support and encouragement. Sue may be running around with the other guys, but Dion wasn't wasting tears over her. It was very primitive, Dion told biographer Gene Scolatti. It had a rhythm, it had a backbeat, nothing else. The problem was trying to record it. Drummers, I don't know what it is, but they hear a certain tempo and they want to play what they know. And I said, no, no, it goes like this. And we simplified it back to what it was, and then we created spontaneously with people clapping, think with an L, excuse me, and banging on things. Runaround Sue was one of the last great New York songs before the Beatles came and changed everything 3 years later. So, but 3 years before that, in 1961, was Dion and the Belmonts with Runaround Sue.
Here's my story, it's sad but true. It's about a girl that I once knew. She took my love, then ran around with every single guy in town.
Dion and the Belmonts there, and Runaround Sue from 1961. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 107.4 and 88.3 FM. This is 1001 Songs, 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley-Jones. Next up, Rag Mama Rag by The Band from 1969, and oh my god, it's got a long blurb. But I'm going to try and commit to reading it all. I am. That's my commitment for you this evening. It begins, for the recording of their second album, the band moved to Los Angeles with their families to escape the hard Woodstock winter. They rented Sammy Davis Jr.'s mansion and turned the pool house into a studio. The five players set up their equipment as much as it had been in Big Pink, with the musicians together in a large room, generally playing at the same time. Everything in rock was kind of going to that high-end direction, said Robbie Robertson. We wanted something different, something kind of woody, thuddy sound. Robertson played guitar and engineered, while producer John Simon also played on some tracks. All the other musicians played multiple instruments. This swapping of instruments gave the band a distinctive sound. It's particularly important for Levon Helm, who played the phrase vocals and around his drumming, giving many of the songs a country funk feel. I started thinking that music was finally taking shape with the second album, said Helm. We actually figured out some methods of to how to really turn up the heat and get the music to cook, to how to blend our voices in three different ways, how to get the track together and to not make it so complicated. We'd sit and talk about the medicine shows and shit, and the tune would just come out to us. A lot of the good old lessons Dylan had given us started to manifest themselves. The band's imagery suggested that the 19th century ambiance of pre-Civil War backwoodsmen and God-fearing patriarchs. In fact, the band was anything but They were a group who had been playing tough rock and roll for a decade in bars and clubs across America, and they were not familiar with folk music and not much accomplished with country. The group's bass player, Rick Danko, for instance, took his style from jazz virtuoso Ronnie Carter and the Motown sound of Chuck Rainey and James Jameson. However, Robertson's myth was the context for everything. Part of that myth relied on the voice and personality of Levon Helm, who was at least from the backwoods of Arkansas, and gave the veracity to songs like Up on Cripple Creek, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, and Rag Mama Rag. This tune here, Rag Mama Rag, from 1969. But wait, there's more. I told you this was a long blurb, didn't I? The latter song was a perfect example of the band's modus operandi. Helm moved to mandolin, Richard Manuel played the drums in his own looping behind the beat style, Danko moved to fiddle, and John Simon played the bass part on the tuba, even though he hadn't previously played the instrument. Rag Mama Rag was like, well, this is one extra one, and we don't have anything much better to do. We might as well just cut this one, said Robertson. It did very much importance until after we recorded it. It showed something else we could do. Richard plays the drums. Rick played the violin. We got to show something else that we do in the style that doesn't exist. You know, name this music. The song was had an appearance on the folk song, but it is in fact pure punk. Me and a bunch of guys from New Orleans would listen to the band all the time, said Mac Dr. John Rinback. Oh, Dr. John, so he probably talks a little bit more like this, if I'm familiar with the work of Dr. John. You know, me minus you equal loneliness. So, you know, along those lines. The music sounded like a really good cross between Memphis and New Orleans. It was really all in the pockets of those places that, without ever copying the original stuff. That is, Dr. John there on the band and Rag Mama Rag.
Yeah.
was The Band and Rag Mama Rag. You're listening to Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs. 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. My God, I'm getting good at this. I said that exactly the same way the time before that and the time before that. You really are getting sick of this phrase. I can just tell. The next song, though, however, the next song is Peter Gabriel from 1977 in Salisbury Hill. Peter Gabriel quit the progressive rock band Genesis for a career as an art rock star. At the time of his departure, Genesis was poised to become one of the most popular groups in the world. England had been conquered and the US beckoned. Much of their success came from the theatrical and confronting live show that Gabriel had developed. Then Gabriel jumped ship. Genesis continued and became huge in America and was indeed one of the most successful rock groups of the 80s. Salisbury Hill was Gabriel's statement of intent, his explanation for leaving Genesis. Allegedly, the inspiration was the Bruce Springsteen concert. Be that as it may, he needed the excitement of a solo life. He also, one suspects, needed to start again. Salisbury Hill is that place. Producer Bob Ezrin bought Detroit rock connection Steve Hunter and Dick Wagner. Gabriel brought along the best of British boffins, Kate Bush, Robert Fripp, Peter Hamill, and Paul Weller. The record sounded quite unlike anything else at the time. Salisbury Hill also featured a peerless vocal from Gabriel. He shouts like a man who has the wind in his hair. He knows that open doors will be shut, but seems not to care. And that is all in his song, Salisbury Hill, by Peter Gabriel. Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. Like I say, Toby Cresswell, Australian music journalist, he would have preferred to have said, I am sure, the 1001 more influential and generally quite good songs of the past 100 years, but I take it his publisher would have said that that was too tepid and tentative. So instead he called it 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, though he makes it quite clear in his foreword that these are not necessarily the great songs of all time. They're just probably the most influential songs of the period of music which he has studied, being the editor of the Rolling Stone in the late 90s. His specific period would have been 20th century popular music. Now, this next piece of 20th century popular music, which Mr. Cresswell has selected for your listening pleasure tonight, is the Jesus and Mary Chain and Just Like Honey. It appears on their 1985 album Psycho Candy. Just Like Honey starts off with Phil Spector's drum phase from Be My Baby, immersed in even more echo than the original, and then followed by a guitar riff that is mostly echo and feedback in a majestic wall of 80s sound. The Reed brothers, who are the Jesus and Mary Chain, knew that they were quoting and what they were doing with it. This is a meeting of British punk rock with attitude and classic rock. With Psycho Candy, we never drive drunk in the studio, we went wild with guitars, said William Reed. We sat there for months making sure we had white noise sampled on the AMS machine and punching it in at certain places. It was as spontaneous as everyone would like it to be, and a lot of people seem to think that you turned up and you were on speed and you fucked around with guitars and that the record magically happened. It's magic, and it did happen, but not the way people wanted it to. It took a lot of time and effort. I bet he doesn't talk like that, but I do like that little impression for voice. Oh, where was I? I was in somewhere down these this paragraph of goodies, as it were. I believe that is the phrase for radio announcers. Apparently it makes people sound more casual or something like that. And you say goodies. The next goodie... Oh, can't I just say paragraph? The next paragraph says that the record inspired hundreds of imitators and prefigured shoegazer fad that took over British rock for a couple of years in the 80s. Just Like Honey is a record of terrible beauty. It is dark and obsessive, but also strangely awe-inspiring. Unlike so many post-punks, the Jesus and Mary Chain weren't deconstructing rock, but rather assembling it again from its decayed parts. The song is viscerally exciting and emotionally moving in a way that so few rock tracks of that period are. The Jesus and Mary Chain and Just Like Honey, right here on Waiheke Radio.
Thank you.
the Jesus and Mary Chain, and Just Like Honey. You're listening to Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4 FM. 1001 songs. This is what this show is, 1001 songs. And I'm Seth Titley-Jones, and these 1001 songs are selected by Toby Creswell. The next song, one out of 1001 songs, which Toby Creswell has selected, is Tears for Fears by Mad World from 1983. Psychologist Arthur Yanoff had his primal scream therapy placed on the pop map by John Lennon, who claimed that Yanoff's techniques enabled him to be brutally honest with himself, and as a consequence he wrote his purgative eponymous solo album. 10 years later, out of the town of Bath comes Roland Orr Zabal. Fired up on Yanoff, the producers that primal whispering album of sensitive pop all about the unnameable suffering, the key track being a melodically rich Mad World. For instance, the lyric of Mad World, and dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I can't remember how that particular line goes, because I can't remember exactly where it is in the song, because I haven't really listened to the lyrics carefully enough, I must confess. You'll find out in a minute, so you listen out for that particular lyric, but I really can't remember how it goes at this particular stage in my life. What Orr Zabal says about this lyric, though, is that it means if dreams come true, if dreams release tension, then the ones in which you have intensely emotional experience, like dreaming of death, will release the most tension. Heavy. That's Mr. Creswell's comment, not mine, that it's heavy. Though, personally, I think it's heavy as well. Though, personally, I would have chosen the word deep there. But he's chosen the word heavy. I think it's because... getting too technical. Getting very technical here. Orr Zabal was happy to drop names like Sartre and Freud in interviews with the pop press and engage in deep philosophical discussions about the meaning of it all. The meaning of it all. Sorry. I think that is very apt of Mr. Creswell. He puts, or whoever, you know, edited this book, he's got discussions about the meaning of it, and then you turn the page. All. What Freud says is that it's not so much about what happened to you during childhood that's important, but it's more how you experienced it. Well, that basically is how what happened to you in childhood, what you experienced. I mean, consider the fact that your universe is entirely of your creation. It's, you know, entirely things exist only insofar as the mind perceived them, or so Schopenhauer said. Oh, God, I'm getting too technical here. This is a very technical bit of philosophy here. It's very, very tempting to get technical. He told Melody Maker about the thing about the Freud and stuff. Where Yanoff comes in is, you were a victim. You were born innocent, and they did this to you. I suppose the truth is somewhere in between. What I believe is that at some point you have to take account of your own actions. We can't keep on saying the problem is capitalism or communism or poverty or ecology. Of course these things can be dealt with, have to be dealt with, I'm sorry, but they have to stop blaming the other and look inside. Very deep. Gorgeous complex melodies and Kurt Smith's sweet vocals ameliorated the pain of it all. Primal therapy isn't a religion, a cult, a sect, or a mythology, Orr Zabal claimed to the readers of the Teeny Bopper magazine Smash Hits. It isn't anything weird at all, just a theory about the importance of relationships between children and their parents. We're not into primal therapy, we're just into living life to the full. Don't you think that's a bit much, you know, to tell some sort of pop music magazine? I don't know, but suffice to say, the fact that, shouldn't say suffice to say, but suffice to say that here is Tears for Fears and Mad World.
Thank you.
apparently very deep song there by Tears for Fears. Mad World. You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 107.4 and 88.3 FM. This is 1001 Songs, 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. The songs were selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Titley-Jones. The final song for tonight is Velvet Underground and I'm Waiting for My Man, which I'll just find in the book here. If heroin on the first Velvet album told you of the experience of taking the drug, actually heroin was the other track that Mr. Cresswell has featured so far about the Velvet Underground, but that's neither here nor there. Then, if heroin was the album that told you of the experience of taking the drug, then I'm Waiting for the Man told you where to get it, on the corner of Lexington and 125th Street. Also, the asking price, $26. As, you know, becomes very apparent in the first verse. I think that he's just ripping them off here, Mr. Cresswell, a bit. It also told you that while you were waiting, you would experience withdrawal, and the Velvet Underground made a sound like that. The churning rhythm guitar on Waiting for the Man is the prototype for what became punk rock. They grind through the changes, where there are changes, obvious to the demands of R&B, just straight chording and overtones. It's extraordinary playing that was hugely influential on the development of heavy rock as it occurred in the 70s, particularly with David Bowie. Where Heroin was an epic poem, this is more urgent and minimal. It remains one of the great rock and roll songs. The critic Lester Bangs said in the late 1970s, modern music stars with Velvet Underground. In fact, it starts with this track, The Velvet Underground and I'm Waiting for My Man.
Don't you holler.
Velvet Underground there, and I'm waiting for the man. You're listening to 1001 Songs. I will be back here next week at the same time and the same channel, both on Monday from 8 until 9 p.m. and then repeated Saturday at 2 p.m. Now, this being May, and May being New Zealand Music Month and all, I'm going to leave you now with a New Zealand track. I'm going to leave you with the Mink Chicks and their cover. You know, they did it at the Music Awards last year, and, you know, they covered the Mink Chicks covered She's a Mod by Ray Columbus and the Invaders. And this is their cover of She's a Mod, right here on Waiheke Radio. Bit of a glitch there. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Until next week, folks. She's a mod, yeah.